I call the fifth meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order now. And I note for the record that there is a quorum present with members Representative Cato, Representative Foster, Representative Davidson, and also I'd like to recognize Representative Boyer. David. C. Davidson. And recognize Representative Boyer. Absent are Representative Pettijohn. So on the agenda before us are House Bill 139 and House Joint Resolution 21. And the first bill before us is House Bill 139. And I'll do the introduction. We're waiting for Representative Donnelly to come and testify. This legislation would require payment of purchases by municipalities and school districts within 30 days of the receipt of all billing material and necessary documentation. Failure to do so would result in interest accrual at the rate of 1.5% per month. Similar legislation was introduced by Representative Donnelly. Minutes taken during the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee hearing on this legislation are in your backup packet. A variety of concerns were raised during this hearing, which we have tried to address in a committee substitute with the assistance of staff to Representative Donnelly. The first concern the committee substitute addresses was raised by the Alaska Municipal League. It was felt that the state procurement code should not be applied to municipalities. We have therefore removed this language. Instead, the language requiring prompt payment has been inserted into the Municipal Code Title 29. The committee substitute would also require that the service or goods being provided and all billing documentation be received by the municipality responsible for the payment before the 30-day period began. This would assure that in rural areas of the state where mail service is only biweekly or weather conditions can prevent service that the borough government, which is responsible for a billing sent to an outlying village, has sufficient time to comply once the billing is received. The last change to the bill would exempt a payment for which reimbursement is available to the municipality under an insurance contract. For instance, if a piece of heavy snow removal equipment was lost in an ice breakup while working on an ice road in a small community, the replacement cost to the community could represent a large portion of their yearly revenue. While the replacement of an equipment would be covered by an insurance plan, in all likelihood, the village would lack the ability to make payment upfront. While I believe the prompt payment of bills should be encouraged and that the state should try to prevent the rights of small and large contractors, I do not want to see unwarranted burdens placed on municipalities or school districts. I believe the purpose of this legislation is to encourage efficient bookkeeping and not to penalize municipalities for situations in which they have no control. There are zero fiscal notes from the Department of Education and Community and Regional Affairs. And since Representative Donnelly is not present at the moment, we will hear testimony from Jim Plasman, and right after that, Scott Burgess. Jim?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jim Plasman from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. We have submitted a zero fiscal note for this legislation. There would be no fiscal impact on our department. The department has not issued a position paper on this bill. We feel that the committee substitute does address some of the substantial concerns that municipalities would have with this legislation. Overall, there is a concern, of course, anytime there is a further mandate put on municipalities by the state, but it's of course very difficult to take a position against people paying their bills on time. So I just wanted to echo that support for the changes made in the committee substitute.
Thank you. And Scott Burgess?
We're not on teleconference, are
we? No, we're not. Not on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Scott Burgess with the Alaska Municipal League. appreciate the opportunity to testify on this piece of legislation. This is not the first time we've seen this bill, and overall, we cannot support the bill. We would oppose it. I think in general, in reference to Jim Plasman's comments, what we are looking for from the state, especially as we have these, which are fairly serious concerns as far as the budget discussions and as far as the budget for that matter, is, and as we see perhaps cuts in the budget and other revenue raising measures being discussed, that we hope that we can look to the state for support and not direction in the sense of mandates and how to do business at the local level. So, and this is what we see in this bill. As the chairperson indicated, there is a CS, and if it's okay, I'll speak to the CS, but I know you've not adopted that, but I will speak to what's my understanding. I've got number one, work draft 215, and would like to speak to the changes, at least in that CS, and support those, even though overall we're not necessarily.
Would you mind if I interrupted him and moved that we adopt the CS for the purpose of discussion?
Okay, there's a motion on the floor to adopt the CS. Is there any objection? Hearing none, motion carried. Okay, Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'll continue then. As far as the CS, the language, and I will certainly refer to the representatives from the school district here, but at least as far as municipalities directly, I would submit that the comments may be the same for school boards, but changing in section 5 of the CS to basically take the language from AS 37 and put it into Title 29 so that it's clear that in fact there's no intent by this legislation to bring the state procurement code, which does not apply to municipalities, and that there's no intention as this being sort of the first step of what might come down the line. So we would support that change. Also in line 7, this is on page 3, we change in subsection 2, clarifying there two things. One, that the 30-day period would start from the receipt of goods. Several municipalities have indicated to us that often the situation, either they receive the bill before the goods because they're back ordered or whatever, or they may receive a partial shipment of the goods, but that in fact they're not being required to pay before they know that they've got the goods at hand. And then this second part of that, in the conjunction, the municipality was responsible for paying. There are some municipalities, certainly in the North Slope borough, whatever, where the municipality may get the bill, but the borough is paying, or there's some other arrangement there, so that the person that's actually responsible for paying the bill gets the notice before the 30-day period starts. And then on the fourth page, line 10, in subsection 4, the underlying language, this would address the issue of when an insurance contract, where you have a third-party payment, individual is to be paid, but the municipality is receiving payments from, say, an insurance carrier or whatever, that they usually would wait till that payment is received. They notify the insurance company pays, and they pass that money on to the person that would rightfully receive that amount. So it would support that. So we certainly support those changes. I did, and I apologize to the committee. The Municipal League, in representing 123 municipalities, is often as slow-moving as other organizations of that size. We do have a legislative committee. When we were aware of the scheduling this bill, we did put it out to let people know. We did receive some comments from Dolly Farnsworth, who's the mayor of City of Soldotna and the chair of the AML Taxation Finance Subcommittee, and Tom Bedeker, who's the borough attorney for Kenai and also a member of that subcommittee. They were some of the people we contacted on our legislative committee, subcommittee on taxation and finance, that would deal with these issues. They did provide comments to me, and it came in just about 11:30 today, and I think your staff may have provided copies of that, or at least they're available. And let me just summarize those, and I'll leave those, and I didn't have a chance to give this to the sponsor as well, and indicated that it has been indicated the sponsor and your staff have worked to try and deal with our concerns, and I'd just like to add to those at this point, so that the CS does not address these all, and so in a couple of cases it has. Number one, just to summarize there, that the bill as written would require, because of the 1.5% a month, it says in there that if it's a part of a month, it's for the whole month. And in another section, statute, AS 3609010, which was another idea of the legislature or municipalities to require them to pay interest on retainage on a contract, they use the language of 10.5% per year. Two comments on that. One, if this bill were to proceed, we'd certainly like the recognition of that interest rate, with that or without it, to, unfortunately, this would work out to 1.5 would be 18% a year, but that you put it on a year so that that can be prorated, you know, by day rather than by month, so that just a fraction of the month, I mean, maybe the second day of the month, and you're all of a sudden you're paying 1.5 for the whole month. So that's number one. Number two is a concern that the legislation, by taking something that applies to the state and trying to impose it on municipalities, that you don't necessarily recognize the differences. Where you don't have the legislature usually approving bills for state purchases, in municipalities, a manager, administrator often is only given authority up to a certain amount, which is usually much less than the $500,000, which is the threshold in this bill. That the governing body, whether it be a council, assembly, a school board, or a service area, perhaps, must approve that billing. And these people do not meet necessarily often enough to deal with the 30-day restriction. So that's the concern there. Again, I'm summarizing these, depending on what the desire of the committee is, whether they want to recognize these issues in terms of changes, and again, depending on what the overall outcome of the bill is. But I just want to summarize these, and we don't have language because we got it too soon. Number three, usually when you receive a bill and it's due the first day of the month or whatever the date says your bill is due, usually you have a grace period of some period of time in order to pay that bill. Unfortunately, with the way the legislation is written, it would appear that, let's say you have a 30-day grace period and you don't pay, and that's when this bill would, I mean, this legislation would mean that you have to start paying interest. It says that you pay from the day, the first day you got the bill, rather than recognizing that grace period. And that we think that you ought to recognize that grace period, that if the interest is to be applied, that it be applied from the day when you're actually overdue. Number four is just a general comment, and is essentially repeated in number six to some degree, that the bill doesn't recognize that in fact municipalities and school districts do have purchasing and procurement policies to receive public testimony, whatever, within the communities, and that they may not conform to these requirements. They may be more strict in some cases. Number five, I think, has been addressed in the committee substitute that you've adopted. And the concern there was the definition of proper billing and the major concern of received, that the billing is received before the goods. And number six, I think, is sort of back to the recognition between the differences between the state and the municipalities, and there are lots of them, and they do business in different ways, but many of them have their own local purchasing and procurement ordinances. And while the bill says that this would apply unless that there was a contract that set out different terms, purchases are being made, lots of them every day, that you couldn't necessarily have a contract with each department, and that's why you have your procurement codes. The other comment made would perhaps be that this language would be in effect, if the committee desires this, in the absence of a local procurement code. In other words, if there is no mechanism that a vendor knows what the terms of payment, receipt of goods and payment would be under the municipalities or the school districts' own procurement code, they would know that this would be in effect in the absence of one. But if they know what they're, who they're dealing with and what the payment procedures are going into an agreement with that municipality, then that would be the controlling document. So again, I find myself often in front of committees, and I require to be at one in a number of minutes, of trying to respond to questions like, when did you stop beating your wife? We do not oppose, and certainly are not trying to say that we don't want to pay our bills. I think the issue here is, one, does the state know better than we do who we're dealing with and how to deal with those people? We have legislative bodies, municipalities, just like yourself, that are subject to political pressure and pressure from vendors, that if in fact there's a problem, it can be addressed. There are local ordinances, there are unique situations in municipalities. There's a whole different approval process than exists in the state. And therefore, we don't think that this language is appropriate or necessary. There may, and I don't doubt that there are unique circumstances where there is fault. I don't think we're going to be able to solve all those problems. In fact, this legislation, while it may say that the bill was $100,000 and 1.5% a month, doesn't necessarily mean the bill is going to get paid. So that isn't necessarily the outcome of this bill. So. Anyway, we can't support the bill. We appreciate the changes that have made in the been made in the CS. I've raised a few others, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Before we go on, I'd like to note for the record, Representative Pettyjohn is with us, and also Representative Cato asked to be excused. Are there any questions? Thank you, Mr. Burgess. And for now, Representative Donnelly will be making his presentation. Did you want to?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think the bill's real self-explanatory. I think all the same.
We're not telephoning?
Okay. I think a lot of these arguments that were raised, except for the ones about the uniqueness of the local government versus state government, were raised when the state went to this system several years back. They said it was going to be costly, cost the state this penalty, and had similar arguments. But the fact is, the legislation ended up saving the state a lot of money, and the same people that were originally opposed to that legislation and putting this requirement on the state government now said that it was one of the best things that happened to them, because they saved thousands and thousands of dollars in interest fees, because they became more efficient and they paid their bills on time and they saved those interest charges that they ended up having to pay to merchants out there, that some of which went bankrupt waiting for them to pay their bills because of their cash flow problems. So I think it's it may inject some fiscal responsibility upon local communities and actually help them save some money. And I guess if it's a problem with the 30-day limit, I think I'd like to hear the people who oppose it tell us what a reasonable time period would be. Because if I was a member of this committee and I was asking questions with Mr. Burgess or any other representatives, I'd say, well, if 30 days is too short, how about 60 days? What about 90 days? What about 120 days? Let's find out what they think is a reasonable amount of time, where there ought to be some level of responsibility by government to fulfill their obligations to citizens that have in good faith provided services or products already to that government. I think you're going to reach some point in time where it just becomes ridiculous that they don't want to pay, within that constraint.
Representative P. Davis?
Representative Dunn, through the chair, I curiosity, just where are there problems? I mean, obviously, you've found a problem and you've identified it and you're trying to solve it, but I'm pretty familiar with my own municipality and school district and the way they pay their bills, and I know full well when there's any kind of a complaint, because I've heard them, I've been involved in, that kind of thing. And I haven't heard those kinds of complaints, and I guess my curiosity is, where are their problems? Have we identified a and you don't have to name names, but have you identified municipalities or school districts or whatever in the state that are consistently bad and that you're trying to address a particular problem? Is it isolated and across the state in isolated instances? Where's the problem, I guess that's my question.
And through the chair, Madam Chair. The bill is a result of hearings that the House Labor Commerce Committee held 2 years ago over the summer. We held extensive hearings. We met with small businesses, had small business forums. And this was one of the problems that those people identified to us, that they were encountering difficulties in this area getting paid by local governments. And they said that it works so good for the state, then why not extend the principle to the other branches of the state? You know, it's really fascinating for me to listen to local governments profess their uniqueness a lot, because, I don't know, I just seem to go back to the philosophical and I guess the foundational principle that's behind local governments. Local governments exist only because the state government exists. If it wasn't for the state constitution, there'd be no empowerment for local government. Local governments bear all the same responsibilities to the citizens of the state as the state government bears. And they should pay their bills on time, just like the state should pay its bills on time. We recognize that at the state level, and I think we should have a recognition of that at the local level, too. And there are representatives from the business community here, Representative Davis, that can probably more specifically address some of the concerns of their membership and the business community. But that's where it really came from, was from the public hearings we held over that summer. I think it was summer of 87.
Thank you. Representative Foster?
Yeah, as a municipality, would that include village government?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
And like I say, Representative Foster, I think it should be a reasonable amount of punishment. And if there's some really good arguments why 30 days is too short because of what they profess as a unique form of government, then let's find out what is a reasonable amount of time. And let's ask that question and find out how long do they think is too long to delay paying somebody who's waiting and has a cash flow problem and needs to be paid.
Representative Foster.
You know, I can understand the concern, but I was engaged in a private enterprise for 20 years and providing air taxi services to mostly state and federal school districts. And God, I can't ever remember ever having a problem, you know. And that's out of mind. Probably the worst offender of that would be the federal government. But as far as the state and the city and the school, I guess they were the best payers, you know, the most prompt. I'm just not aware of what the problem is. I'd like to hear somebody say, yeah, we had a problem in Kenai or Fairbanks or something. But, you know, the state government and the city governments realize their responsibility, especially in small communities, and the importance of cash flow. And they've always bent over backwards, or with my own experience, to assist private enterprise.
To the chair,
if
that's a question.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great,
yeah.
And if that's the case, then this bill isn't going to hurt them at all.
Yeah.
They're able to pay their bills sometime like that. I think it's wonderful.
But you know, I can foresee like village governments. You know, a lot of them are broken, and they're awaiting a grant. And meanwhile, their plumbing freezes up. You know, and it takes more than 30 days. And to regulate, make mandate by statute that they've got to pay in 30 days when the plumber knows that the village of Shaktulik is broke, for example, and you fly the plumber from Nome, and they realize the situation. You know. And to mandate a regulation here saying that they've got to pay when they really don't have any money, and everybody understands that to begin with, you know, I don't know where the fairness in that is. Yeah.
Madam Chair?
Mm-hmm.
I think clearly if somebody knew that going up front, and I think somebody like a village should tell them up front, and you're creating a hypothetical where the village tells that plumber ahead of time, well, we really
it's
need to do this.
It's not hypothetical. It happens
well,
every day.
I think that's great. No,
yeah.
It's a realistic hypothetical.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's an unrealistic hypothetical. It's a hypothetical where the village says, or the small municipality says, we really need a plumber out here. But, you know, we're going to tell you right up front that we're not going to be able to pay you for a while. And the plumber says, yeah, that's okay. I don't think you got any problem there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this legislation creates any problem there either. I do think it would be wrong for somebody to entice, recontract for somebody and have them come out and do work they know they couldn't pay them for. Because that individual may be counting on that money to feed his family that day and that month. and then when they're not paid, and then they've got to be sit down and wait 6 months or a year for some local government to pay them, when they were counting on that to pay for the food for their children for that month, I really think that's wrong.
Yeah. Well, I share your concern, I understand.
Okay, are there any further questions? Thank you, Representative Donnelly.
Thank you.
He did pose a good question to the people that are testifying, whether what amount of time would be reasonable, 30, 60, 90. And the next person to testify is Harvey Sullivan. If you would state your name and your address and who you're representing, and your phone number.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm Harvey Sullivan, and I represent the National Federation of Independent Business. And the address is 430 C Street, Anchorage, Alaska, 99501. Telephone number is 276-2246. And I would like to say, just preliminarily, that the National Federation of Independent Business, or NFIB, is an organization that is very supportive of small business throughout this country. And in the state of Alaska alone, there are over 3,700 members of NFIB, representing nearly all of the various small business sectors existing in the state, many of whom depend in great part on their business dealings with municipalities and state government for their livelihood. And we are supportive of this bill. We have reviewed it. And I can say on behalf of National Federation of Independent Business and its over 3,700 members that this is a good bill. This is a bill that will solve problems that are existing today. I've noted some of the previous comments that various municipalities or regions may not be having a problem, and we applaud that, but that doesn't mean that the problem doesn't exist in the state and it isn't a very real problem. And we feel that municipalities should be held to the same standard as state government. I've noted that one or two comments about, for example, the line 7 on page 3 that was discussed earlier. Mr. Burgess noted that there might be a difference between the municipality with whom you've done immediate business and the municipality actually required to pay. I think the wording of section 2 on page 3 does address that. It says the municipality that is responsible for paying for the purchase. Well, I think either by regulation or clarification of that particular line in section 2, it addresses Mr. Burgess's concern. And he also was concerned about the possibility that billings were coming in before the goods or services were actually performed or received. And I think that's also addressed in line 3, which says, receives a proper billing for the amount of the payment due. Well, obviously, if the payment isn't due because the goods haven't been received, well, then the 30-day period does not begin to run. And proper billing, I think, can be expanded by definition to show whether or not the services were performed as were contracted for. If any change might be necessary, in our opinion, it would be the definition of dispute on page 4. It would be good, I think, to try to clarify the meaning of the word dispute a little bit further than what it has been here, so that there can be no arbitrariness in the application of that word. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that I can.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Representative Foster.
First of all, I want to thank you for attending. I've paid dues with your fine organization for many, many years, and
just
I'm glad to see that you guys really do go to hearings. But on the other hand, are you aware of any specific problems?
No, we don't engage in the process of collecting complaints.
So this is, you're addressing a theoretical problem as far as you're concerned, then. You're not aware of any specific...
Oh, I've had my own personal problems.
That's what I want to hear.
That's not the official statement of NFIB.
Yeah.
I don't want to categorize any one particular problem I may have had as being representative of the entire mm-hmm. organization. I guess, you know, I have to kind of take Representative Donnelly's stand on that and say that if there are no problems, well, then good. This isn't mm-hmm. hurt anybody. And I've heard you say just previously that why should a city be forced to pay or if say at the end of a 30-day period if they just don't happen to have the money at that point? Well, that's not going to hurt that municipality if they can get the money in a reasonable time frame. Mm-hmm. All of this is saying is they're going to have to pay some interest on it. you know, my credit card company requires that of me if I don't pay off the balance, and 1.5% I think less than what I have to pay if I don't. So it's not saying that it's going to create some egregious situation for the municipality. It simply says it's going to cost them a little bit more if they want more time.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
Okay, any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
The next person to testify is Marla Huss.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Marla Huss, and I work for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Basically, I just would like to reiterate what Scott Burgess said. We support the concept of being responsible and paying on time. However, we have some problems with the state putting restrictions on the municipalities that are not unique to municipalities. Representative Donnelly asked for a specific situation on how we are unique, and I would like to expand on a little bit. At the state government, departments and the governing body, the legislature, are separate in their administrative responsibilities. The departments pay for their own bills and are all handled in-house. In a local government, you have a different situation. For example, we have service areas that meet bi-monthly or monthly. And if they receive a bill, maybe a week after they have met, they're not going to meet again for 3 weeks. So it would take 3 weeks for them to meet, approve the bill, send it to the borough, who deals with the administration of paying bills. So we're not separate from the governing bodies and the administration. This requires a longer time period than 30 days to address the payment of the bills. So specifically in that section, I think there does need to be more flexibility. What we really think is that if a municipality or a local school district has their own provisions or their own policy ordinance that deals with procurement practices, this should not supplant that. That this should come into effect, as Scott said, in the absence of a local policy or ordinance. I realize that in this bill you have addressed the municipality by taking them out of Title 37 and redefining language in Title 29, which we can support that. I think that needs to happen. Some accommodation needs to be made at the school districts also. If they have their own policy, that should be taken into consideration. The other comment that I wanted to emphasize that Scott made was the percentage rate that on the interest charge should be per annum, so that it could be prorated for a partial month delinquency as opposed to paying a full month delinquency. That's all the comments I wanted to make.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you. The letter from Dolly Farnsworth and Thomas Bodecker are put into the record because that's part of the testimony regarding House Bill 139. And right now I would like to entertain a motion to pass committee substitute House Bill 139, Community and Regional Affairs, from committee with individual recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there is a motion on the floor. Any objections? Hearing none, motion carried.
I did have one question for Representative Donnelly. Apparently this was entered in before. I see comments from Henry Springer. Mm-hmm. Did it just not get acted on in the last session? Or?
Through the chair? Representative, we had, my first year as chair of Labor and Commerce, we organized for the summer, and we held hearings over the summer to try to find out what we could do to help small business. And this was probably the best idea, the feedback we got from them at those hearings. So then we worked on that and introduced it the second year, right?
Late
in the second year.
Okay.
And then Representative Springer held hearings on it, worked out some language difficulties, and passed it from CNRA, I think. And then it was just late in the year, though. And I think it moved out of CNRA and then went for finance. We can tell you.
No, that's I was just
watching. Yeah, but we didn't get an intel late in the second year as a result of the hearings we had in the interim.
Thank you. We'll be on teleconference.
Do you have any testimony from the other bill? We have House Joint Resolution 21 for consideration, and we are on teleconference, and I'd like to find out what teleconference sites are missing. We'll be hearing testimonies from people who would like to testify, and I'd like to know if in Anchorage we have Juanita Helms and Mike Wallery.
In Fairbanks we have Guy Van Doren to testify.
Okay, thank you. What about in Fort Yukon? Okay, thank you, Fort Yukon. And again, in Anchorage, do we have Juanita Helms there?
No, we don't. We have two observers.
Okay.
Michael Wallery is not going to testify. He had to go to another meeting now.
Okay, thank you. Okay, House Joint Resolution 21 was introduced by Wallace, and the Local Boundary Commission submitted its annual report to the legislature on January 18, 1989. At that time, the Local Boundary Commission recommended that the legislature approve the annexation of 216 square miles or territory. This area is unpopulated and includes 16 miles of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline and Pump Station 7. House Joint Resolution 21, which was introduced by Representative Wallace, would disapprove this recommendation. If this resolution does not pass both bodies of the legislature before March 4th, this annexation will take effect. Two fiscal notes have been issued on this legislation. There is a zero fiscal note from the Department of CNRA. A fiscal note was also issued by the Department of Revenue reflecting $1,981,000 loss in revenues in fiscal year 1990. This loss would continue yearly at an estimated 7% reduction. This reflects the projected decline of the property valuation. So would members please note that we are on teleconference, and here to speak on behalf of House Joint Resolution 21 is the sponsor, Representative Kay Wallace. I have the floor. Would you please join me?
Yes, where would you like me to sit?
Right up here.
Oh, I see.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Representative Kay Wallace. I'm from Election District 24. And I would like to say I appreciate your prompt response and consideration of Resolution HJR 21 to disapprove the Local Boundaries Commission recommendation for the North Star Borough annexation. This issue is important to my district as we seriously address the questions of self-government and how to make it work in the unorganized boroughs, in the unorganized areas of the state. As you know, Election District 24 is a large geographical area, also economically disadvantaged. The Local Boundary Commission Act seems to me to go against the spirit of the action taken by the legislature last year and Legislative Resolve 52. You may recall that we requested them to, quote, take into full consideration the desires of residents of an area in the unorganized borough to be self-governing and to give the unorganized areas reasonable time to study the concept. I do not believe in my heart that we have had time to consider the concept. The issue was brought before the Legislative Boundary Commission by Fairbanks North Star Borough in September of 1988. I wonder if perhaps a late introduction and the 45 days that we have to disapprove of the recommendation is a reasonable amount of time. I think the recommendation flies in the face of Legislative Resolve 52. We have many concerns here, especially with regard to the Local Boundary Commission. The commission has submitted a recommended boundary change to the legislature, which was not supported by a majority of its members. Allowing a borough to annex land primarily to add to its tax base and removing the revenue from the state income at this time without more consideration also concerns me. The Anchorage Daily News said it well in their editorial December 27th, quote, the commission decision failed to explain why Fairbanks needs the money more than other Alaskans. Alaskans who will pay the bill through lower state revenue. It also concerns me that this decision was made without more public comment from the individuals and council organizations in my district. It seems to me that a decision of this importance should and could have a lot of opportunity for public reaction. During the 4 months and during the 45 days that we have here is not adequate time to respond. I'd like to mention that in the Senate CNRA committee, Jonathan Solomon from Fort Yukon testified that he sat on the REA district selecting process in the early years, and Fairbanks was offered the Live and Good area as a school district, and they turned down the offer, and in fact the Live and Good area went into the Yukon Flats School District. I understand that in the Legislative Resolve 52 that people can protest if they do not want to be part of the borough. I wonder how many people in the Live and Good area understand their right to do this. I guess the main concern of my district and myself is that we're saying, look, this is something we are working on. Give us the time to do it. I do not appreciate the intent of one area of the state slamming something through the legislature just because of the 45-day limit. I believe that the controversial circumstances surrounding the legislative the Local Boundary Commission's recommendation warrants more consideration. There's a larger state policy issue here than what is being taken to in consideration, just the fact that Fairbanks North Star Borough would like to do this. At this time, I don't know if that is the proper plan or not. However, I do feel that people in Election District 24 need to have the time to take this into consideration as they are themselves considering borough formation. And that's why the Legislative Resolve 52 was introduced last year. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you, Representative Wallace. And also testifying is Representative Hoyer.
Madam Chairman, I'm just here to listen and perhaps ask some questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go into any questions.
Yes, thank you. This is Guy Van Dorn. I'm with the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly as a staff person. And Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm not here to testify in the fact that you will hear from, I believe, one of our assemblymen down there in Juneau. I only come on the air to request that copies, transcripts of the meeting today and possibly tapes of the meeting today be sent to the Fairbanks North Star Borough once they are transcribed. And there's, I can give you the address, it's P.O. Box 1267, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99707, and I certainly would appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Van Dorn. And Oscar Frank, Jr.
Yes, hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you fine.
Okay, yeah. My name is Oscar Frank, Jr., and I work for the Fairbanks Subregion Office of Canada Chiefs Conference. And this morning, I talked to three of our villages who would like to comment on this House Joint Resolution number 21. And because they're unable to speak today through the teleconference, they've asked me to, and these villages are Manly Hot Springs, Minto, and just those two that I can think of just now. They support this year Resolution 21 that was submitted by Kay Wallace, and they'll be sending some public opinion messages down to Representative Wallace and also to the House Community Regional Affairs Committee and the House Finance Committee. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Could you please state your address?
Okay, my address is 322nd Avenue, Fairbanks. The zip code is 99701.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Frank.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going into Fort Yukon, and we have Pat Stanley.
I'm here to observe and listen because there's been so much discussion here, but Tom Armour is here, and he would like to testify.
Okay, thank you. Tom, you have the floor.
Thank you. My name is Tom Farmer. I'm the business manager of the Yukon Flats School District based here in Fort Yukon. First of all, we do oppose the annexation. We very much favor the passage of Representative Wallace's HJR 21. Our opposition is primarily based on procedural grounds because we are the area directly affected. We heard in a hearing or a meeting of some kind in which we were not given the opportunity to comment that there were virtually no inhabitants of the area, that there wasn't even a school, and oddly, we've not been provided a good map of where the boundaries are. However, in talking to people that I know at least part-time reside in the area, there are inhabitants. Only a few years ago, we had correspondence students residing in that area. Up until this year, our school bus route ran down into that area. So procedurally, we feel that this has gotten too far down the road before those of us who actually will be severely impacted have had a chance to say anything. A big concern, like I just indicated, was where is that boundary? The map that came to us through LBC was very, very difficult to read, yet in talking to, as I indicated, a part-time resident of the area, the line that Fairbanks is talking about taking over runs almost to the cutoff road that goes into the school grounds, which incidentally are leased from yet another private individual. So what we're saying is a lot of this has transpired without accurate information. We therefore oppose it.
Thank you very much. Are there any other teleconference sites that would like to testify? Thank you, and we'll be going back into Juneau. Jeff Welson.
Yes, committee members, thank you for... Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Jeff Welzine, and I'm a member of the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. And I'm here to reiterate some of the reasons that the Assembly went forward with this this proposal. And the fundamental reason is that it's mostly action to correct something that should have been done a long time ago. That region has been socially and economically tied to Fairbanks for years, and we at one time served the area with our emergency medical services, our area-wide EMS service, and unbeknownst to the administration at that time, and we were actually misspending funds because we could not actually provide that service above and beyond our boundary, yet we were doing it for years, until our attorney told us not to do that in 1986. And that at that point, we stopped serving the area from an EMS standpoint. And that was when the idea of annexation began to gel. And for the last few years, we've been toying around the idea and considering it, and it's taken that long for us to gel and come forward with the proposal. And so with that in mind, I would urge members to review the booklet that we passed out earlier. That's got a lot of good information in it, and I would want to mention a few points here that I think will show why it's in the best interest of the state and state to go forward with this annexation proposal. The specifics of it, I think, are important to consider. And the Boundary Commission, in their recommendations, went through a number of criteria. And their findings were that based on the facts, the Commission has concluded that annexation is necessary to accomplish a valid public purpose in satisfaction of the state's annexation standards. And they go to list the reasons why. And one of the fundamental reasons why is the assessed tax base of the Fairbanks North Star Borough in comparison to many other boroughs in the entities and municipalities in the state. And what you find is that where Fairbanks has a per capita assessed evaluation of $60,000, there is a long list of other municipalities that assess evaluation goes multi-fold above and beyond that. And that was a primary indicator to the Boundary Commission that Fairbanks, for its population and for the services it provides, had an inadequate or less than adequate tax base to support our activity. And it was the motivation for us proposing the annexation also. And I would also like to just generally comment that I don't believe this is a rural versus urban issue. If possibly Fairbanks was Anchorage and located where it was, possibly would be, but Fairbanks is the largest of the villages in the interior of the state, and its interests are one and the same with the smaller villages in the interior. There's no doubt about it. The population of Fairbanks has a significant component of rural people from the interior area. The support services for the rural interior are based in Fairbanks, and the interaction between Fairbanksans and rural folks is quite intense, and it's daily, and I in no way see this as a conflict with rural folks' ability to organize in some future governmental unit. And I think that was brought out in the testimony or in the findings of the Boundary Commission. The fact of the matter is that this annexation proposal is adjacent to the boundaries of the Fairbanks North Star Borough and is many, many miles away from the nearest village or regional corporation, native corporation land selection, and which to me indicates that it was never historically part of the rural interior, if you will. It was always geographically and socially tied to the Fairbanks area. And so I just don't buy the argument that it will impact the ability of villages north of the Yukon River and Minto to the west and Birch Creek to the east in organizing their governmental entity. And the local boundary commission also drew that conclusion, as is shown in on the one page. I'll read this because I think it's important. The value of a property in the Yukon Flats region is so great that state law would preclude a borough in that region from taxing all the property. The law would limit the authority of the borough to tax no more than $311 million of the $805 million that is available in the area to be taxed. Even with the annexation proposal to the Fairbanks North Star borough, this proposed borough, or the idea of a borough in that region, would still have $642 million of assessed valuation to tax, of which state law would only allow them half to be taxed at this point. So it's quite clear that even with this annexation proposal, that any effort to organize a borough north of this of the annexation proposal would have more than enough taxable property to make a viable governmental entity. And I would love to answer any questions that any members would have at this point.
Are there any questions? I have a question.
Sure.
So the premise of the Fairbanks North Star Borough is to have a tax base increase. Is that the purpose of the annexation?
Madam Chair, it's to correct a problem, a deficiency that we should have corrected a long time ago. The people who work in that annexation proposal live in Fairbanks, use Fairbanks services. Their children go to school in Fairbanks. And as I said, we have in the past provided services to that area, but the combination of that and then the realization of increasingly tight times has caused us to put the proposal forward. So it's a combination of both revenue enhancement measures based on a historical context that is part of the Fairbanks area, and the people who work there live in Fairbanks.
Are there any other questions? Representative Davis?
Madam Chair, I don't know if this witness is the correct question to ask this of, so I'll just ask a general question. If anybody can answer it, more power to them. It seems there's a conflicting statement here. I read the thing that you just quoted from the Local Boundary Commission, which said that if a borough were formed within the Tanana Chiefs area, there would be more taxable property available than they could use under state law. And then in the statement of the Tanana Chiefs Conference, they say that if this property is taken away, they will not have enough taxable area left to form a borough. I'm having a problem with that again.
Madam Chair, Representative Davis, I think that those comments of Tanana Chiefs have been analyzed by both DCRA and our borough staff, and basically have been found to be faulty in their conclusion. And that's about as simple as I can put it.
Okay, if you will look at item six, there's a memo regarding the tax-based equalization. There is a dispute on the population figures, and therefore the difference between their statements. Are there any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We have before us for consideration House Joint Resolution 21. With individual recommendations?
Yes.
Thank you. There's a motion on the floor to pass House Joint Resolution 21 from committee with individual recommendations. Any objections? Hearing none, motion carried. Thank you. This concludes our teleconference and our meeting. Thank you. We're closing our meeting.